Everybody to the Giselle Show podcast Meet Friends, where we are making stuff up, being real and talking about it. We're here today with Vanessa McGrady, Amos Glick and Madison Perry. Coming up this segment, we have wonderful Madison Perry is going to introduce us to his fantastic new book. We're going to do the creativity wheel of death. First, I want to share, we have a tweet from Joseph Douglas Watson, who tweet in, great song, Amos, as usual.
Thank you, JTW.
Thank you, JTW. You are very talented, he say. So that's very nice of him. Let us do some more of the 100 words that we had written on the prompt of feverish. Madison, do you want to go for it?
Sure. I wrote some flash fiction.
Ooh.
I guess you'd cough just... Feverish. Was this a fever dream? He definitely had the fever, had had one for a few days now, but in order to dream, you need to be asleep, and he was pretty sure he was awake. He got up and drove to work, after all. He remembered that. But reality did seem a little surreal. Like, for instance, he was now eating his coworker Pete's brain. He didn't want to do it, but here he was, cracking open Pete's skull and slurping out the insides like it was an oyster. In retrospect, he should have called in sick today.
Oh my god, that's great.
Thank you.
Funny. Vanessa?
Well, that's hard to follow.
Do you want me to go and then you I will be easy to follow.
Let me just get it over with. So I'm an overachiever, so I did three, but I'm gonna just do the last one.
Okay.
I had discarded my childhood dreams, thinking them foolish and pedestrian. But over the weekend, we went from a one-pet household to a 274-pet household. We moved them from the kitchen to the living room, where we thought they would feel more at home, then onto the dining room table for more sunlight. In the first few days, they didn't move at all. I thought I'd failed their tiny lives. But today, and I shall never forget the moment, life proved indomitable. Wiggles here. Over there, are those guys forming a democracy? As I witness the magic of sea monkeys unfolding, I am whole. That's a true story.
The magic.
That's great. I was on the front of my seat wondering what it was. It's
I know.
Worms or chickens?
I thought ant farm and then a worm box.
No, it seemed actually we never ever. I was like, when I was a kid, I would always like send in like envelopes of change to Sea Monkey, and I never got them because, of course, like you can't send in envelopes of like $5 in change. But my daughter got Sea Monkeys for her birthday, so we did them, and then today they were moving. So
that was good. Yeah. Great. Okay, and mine for feverish is this. Feverish, sucking in on itself, twitchy, desiccated, the need-want rat slinks through your brain, grips your heart. You need a fresh tomato. You want a new down jacket. You need to catch up on Game of Thrones. You want to rest. You want peace. Need-want rat makes everywhere you go feel like a shopping mall, the real mall of America, in which you are always calculating, scheming, planning your next procurement. You need to get somewhere other than where you are. You need to be better. You need to exercise. You want pizza for dinner. You need to take a stand for Afghanistan. You want to smack someone. You want love. Need want rat is what you see when you can't look at yourself in the mirror. Need want rat quickens your pulse and weakens your foundation. Need want rat is the tremor that keeps you unsettled. How can you kill need want rat? Starvation. Feed it not, heed it not. Need want rat will scream and claw and fail. Feed it not. Eventually, need want rat will tire and fade. It will become dust and it will blow away. And then...
Ooh. Whoa. Wow.
Thank you.
I want to start a proto-punk band called Need Want Rat.
Do it.
I was a little stressed out listening to that.
So good.
I do want pizza for dinner also.
You need it.
I need it.
You need it.
Give me that pizza.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's Madison Perry.
That's me. Pizza lover, moisturizer.
Madison Berry is a brilliant storyteller, star of The Moth and all kinds of storytelling shows around town and around the country.
Sometimes, mostly around town.
Okay.
A few times around the country.
Lucky us.
Yeah.
He's just written a book which has just been published and is out now. It is called Available, a memoir of heartbreak, hookups, love, and brunch. Madison, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Are you going to share with us to start a little excerpt from the book?
I can. I can do that.
Or would you rather answer questions first?
We'll do questions first.
Oh, that sounds great.
Yeah.
I like that. I could kind of see in your eyes that you need wanted that.
Yes, I need it.
Well, you said earlier, talking about silencing your inner critic by just writing everything down before you have time to think about it and allowing yourself to have bad ideas.
Yeah.
I just love that. Was that something that you had to learn and come to trust in yourself?
Yes. And I don't think I learned it specifically in a class. I just learned it through years of trying to create things and trying to write. As we were talking about earlier, you find what process works for you. And I discovered that I'm a much better rewriter than I am a writer. And so I need to get to having a completed thing, even if it's really bad, so that I can fix it.
Yeah.
And so the best way to do that for me is to not self-censor. So my first drafts are always at least 50% longer than I know they will end up being. And sometimes I'll even put in brackets like, need something here, or probably we'll cut this part, and just keep going.
You have such a calmness about your artwork and an equanimity. I'm looking at you. I wish we had a periscope up so that everybody could see, because you're just so calm in yourself.
Yeah.
And I find it very inspiring.
Oh, thank you.
Do you ever have what I call art attacks?
What is an art attack?
Where you start to feel insecure, or you say, I've thrown my life away, or what am I doing, or this will never happen, or that, you know.
Sure. I think because I've been married 2.5 years, and we probably will have kids at some point, and so the pressures of the financial, having enough money, is, I think, difficult for a lot of artists. And so I feel very lucky to have the success I've had, but it also hasn't brought about lifetime financial security.
Oh, yeah.
So yes, in the darker moments when you're Googling yourself and checking how the book is doing on Amazon, I'm just, you know, you think, wow, I just don't know that I'll ever make a true living doing this. Now, luckily, I have a wife with a real job, so that gives me a bit more time to figure things out and turn it into a long-term career. But I think with this book anyway, I feel very proud of the book itself, and I worked on it for a long time and very hard. And I think especially whether you're a musician or not, a writer, your first thing is sort of the culmination of almost your whole life of working. And so I feel confident that most people will enjoy the book, and I kind of have a good feeling for the type of book it is.
It's all about your dating travail.
Yes. Yeah. It begins with me getting dumped, and then I decided I should be single for a year, but not celibate. And so I dated a lot, and a lot of these stories started as stories I did live at The Moth or other storytelling shows. And so I started writing them all down, and it's kind of like Eat, Pray, Love, but a dude. So I when I was writing it, I told my agent, I was like, I think I wrote a book for women mostly.
Wait, how long ago could have that been? Like when you were 13? I mean,
when?
Because he's very young looking.
Yeah, I do. It's all the moisturizing. No, I'm 35 now, so this journey, this spiritual journey of me being a slut started when I was 30, is when I got dumped. So it's been a few years.
Wow. Yeah. And you must have had some crazy adventures in that year.
Yes, I did. I found that because I dated a lot, but I had a rule that I would not become anyone's boyfriend. I would not date anyone seriously, and I tried to be upfront about that. And the good thing about that was I got to date people I wouldn't normally date, because since I wasn't looking for something serious, you'd be like, oh, if I'm attracted to someone, they seem interesting, I'll go out with them, even if it doesn't seem like it will work out. Maybe they're from somewhere else, or we don't have a lot in common.
Did you date the guys who was working in my yard?
Did I date them?
Maybe so.
Maybe. I mean, it's hard to remember. Another part of that attitude was I'd always had a lot of very serious relationships. I would go from relationship to relationship. And so for the first time in my adult life, I didn't have to think about anyone else when I made choices. So I traveled a lot. I went to Thailand. I went to Burning Man. I would go see friends. And so I met a lot of new people, and it was really a great confidence builder.
Do you still keep in touch with any of those people from the year?
Not a lot of them.
Oh.
a couple, and one texted me a couple days ago.
Oh, that, nice.
A chapter seemed familiar to her. I said, yeah.
In a good way?
Yes. She said she was flattered and thought the chapter was funny. And one thing I tried to do, there's very few, both because I had good experiences and because I didn't want to write a book trashing everyone I dated, there's only a couple chapters that are really about someone being sort of bizarre or a crazy bad date. Mostly it's about things I learned about myself and about dating. And so I tried to paint the people who I dated, who I mostly had very nice feelings about, in a positive light. So I think most of the people in the book will be flattered. And then we'll see who mails me dog poop. But.
I have to know, was this... analog dating or did you do online?
This was mostly online. I did ask people out that I met in person, but just to do the numbers I wanted to do, I had to go online. So I, at this point, OkCupid was the hot dating, wasn't even an app at that point, just a website. Mm-hmm. And I actually really enjoyed the process of online dating. I think it helped that I wasn't looking for a serious relationship, so I wasn't really frustrated. You know, the worst case scenario was I went on a date and you could usually tell pretty quick, like, yeah, there's not much here. And so we wouldn't go out on a second date, but I didn't mind that so much. And mostly I met nice people that some were very okay with my plan to not be serious, and some said that's not for me.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's very cool.
It was fun.
You draw from your, this is interesting because this, I've heard you do your storytelling and you're brilliant.
Thank
just
you.
Brilliant. He's funny and pathos, heart feeling. And you draw your stories from your life and your experiences. But mm-hmm. The interesting thing is the little flash fiction that
yeah.
you just read was also lovely and funny.
Oh, thank
and
you.
That wonderful surreality. Do you think you might dip your toe in the fiction pool?
Yeah, I think the next book I write will be a novel. Just to take on a new challenge, and also I like ran out of life to talk about in a book. So I have to like start having babies and traveling or something, and maybe in 5 years I'll write
that's
another.
The best reason to have a baby is to write
for
a
material.
Book. Yeah,
yeah,
for material.
Yeah. So yeah, and I think my wife is also glad that the next book will be fictional. She read enough about me having sex with other women to last her a while.
You gotta shake your baby. Do something funny so I can write about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, exactly.
No, don't shake your baby. Madison, will you favor us with an excerpt
sure.
from your book?
I will. I will just tell a story instead of reading.
Oh, wonderful.
Because a lot of these started as stories. So during this time, I got back in touch with a girl I went to high school with. And not just a girl, but a girl I had a big crush on at the time. She was named Michelle Glimmerman. You might have heard of her. She's the prettiest girl in school. and so we got in touch over Facebook. And in high school, I really had a crush on her. I liked her. She was beautiful, funny, smart, all that stuff. But I never asked her out or even told her I liked her because I never said I liked you to anyone. I never had a girlfriend in high school, didn't kiss anyone even, because I was a late bloomer. So I was very shy around girls. So in my senior year of high school, I weighed 130 pounds and was 5'4", had no hair on my body below the neck at that point. And so one of my nicknames in high school was Porcelain Baby Madison, because I looked so young that I resembled the dolls they sell like on QVC. sometimes in the hall, people would be like, for just three easy payments of $19.99, you can own your very own porcelain baby Madison. And no one wants to have sex with a porcelain baby doll. So I never asked.
There's a website for that.
There's, yeah, I mean, in Japan, yes. But and so I never asked anyone out. But Michelle Glimmerman and I had this moment, a friend of mine threw a party. And I didn't drink at all in high school. My friends didn't. So normally our parties meant playing GoldenEye for Nintendo 64, drinking Mountain Dew, and like figuring out creative ways to fart on each other. That was like a great Friday night. But this one weekend, my senior year of high school, his parents were out of town. And so his younger sister, who was a couple grades below us, also invited her friends over. So we were going to have an overnight sleepover party. And Michelle Glimmerman was coming. So I was excited to be around her and talk to her. I didn't think anything happened. Like all the other guys were like, I'm going to get with Kelly and I'm going to get with, Jenny. And I was like, I'm going to watch you get with Kelly and Jenny. And, so the party started and, we went out to, they had a hot tub and it was a 4-person hot tub. And there was 11 of us, but we all got in. And so girls were sitting on guy's lap and Michelle Glimmerman ended up on my lap. And, like, to this point in my life, this was great. It was like the Broncos winning the Super Bowl and Michelle Glimmerman sitting on my lap are the two thrills of my young life at this point. And it was, you know, fun and you know, we could, our legs were like, she had her smooth kind of hairless legs and I could feel them rubbing against my smooth hairless legs. And it was just like, it was hot. And so although I was a little worried because I was scared the entire time that I would get a boner. Which is a big worry when you're, it's horrible for men because the end of your life is you're like, oh, I hope I can get a boner. And most of the beginning of your life is like, I hope I don't get a boner right now. And there's like a small window in the middle where you're like, I get appropriate boners. This is great. So I'm worried about the boner. So we get out of the hot tub and I was like, well, that was great. Clearly a mistake was made. It was an accident. She ended up on my lap and we went inside and we were all sitting around as a group on the floor. And one of my friends, Ron, suggested that people give each other massages. Because Ron was like that kind of guy. A lot of people have that friend in high school who's like, you know, a pervert. And so he had suggested this and Michelle Glimmerman said, do you want a massage? And I was like, yeah. And so she started rubbing my shoulders, and it felt amazing. And I kept thinking of the number 73, because Ron, the aforementioned pervert, had often cited that 73% of massages between men and women resulted in a sexual interaction. Which is probably totally made up, and he read it in Maxim, but he was like so confident and specific. I was like, well, that's science. That's like, there's a university running this experiment, and they've crunched these numbers. So I was like, I have a 73% chance of hooking up with Michelle Glimmerman tonight. So the night wore on, I gave her a massage and we were laughing and hanging out and then it was time to go to sleep and people found places on the ground and I had Michelle and Glimmerman and I were next to each other and the lights went out and I'm like, this is it. I just have to make the first move. I can hear people hooking up all around me going off to the bathroom and blankets shuffling and I'm like, just have to make the first move. I don't know what a move is. I don't know a move. And then I started to get down. I was like, she probably doesn't like me. That's probably like a totally platonic lap sitting in the hot tub and the massage. And she's just like passionate about physical therapy. Probably that's why she wanted to give me a massage. And so I just wanted one more sign that she liked me. You know, like if she would tap me on the shoulder or whisper my name or like hand me a written note that was notarized that said like, you can kiss me, like anything subtle like that, I definitely would have made a move. But no sign came. Eventually I could tell by her breathing, she'd fallen asleep. And I just hated myself. I just stared at the ceiling all night. I was hearing people make out around me. And I was like, I'm just never gonna, like, if I can't do it now, how am I ever gonna kiss a girl? This is so pathetic. I'm just a loser. And I started, I was like, maybe there'll be another party and I'll get another chance. And I definitely will do something. But a week later, she started dating a basketball player named Jack Coleman, who's a real jerk, as you might imagine, a basketball player named Jack Coleman might be. and so I had lost the girl to the jock in the classic scenario and always regretted that I'd been so cowardly. And I kissed other girls later in life, like it worked out, but I still regretted the cowardice of that night. And so during this year of when I was really putting myself out there and trying to get dates, I contacted her on Facebook and we exchanged some nice messages and I suggested next time I was in Colorado, we go to dinner. And so we did, and we had this great date, and we still really got along, and she still looked great. And I was very, I'd been dating a lot at this point, so I was feeling very confident, and I was like, I'm going to know what to do. Like, I have a pro account on OkCupid. I know what I'm doing here. And so she invited me to her place, and I was like, great, yeah, let's go there. And she put on an episode of Mad Men and turned off the lights, and now we're sitting on the couch together. 13 years later, I'm in alone with Michelle Glimmerman next to her in the dark. And again, I freeze. Oh. I just, in that moment, I'm like the little kid again. I feel like my hair has fallen out of my armpits, and I'm just, you know, poor some baby Madison is like, how are we going to do this? I don't. And so I, you know, I had to psych myself up, but I finally, I like took a few deep breaths. I was like, you can do this. You've kissed girls before. You've had sex. I'd had sex at this point, intercourse. And so finally, I made a move. I waited to the end of the episode, but that was just because it was a good episode of Mad Men, honestly. And when the credits rolled, I leaned over and I kissed her and she kissed me back. And we ended up making out and I stayed most of the night and we actually didn't have sex, but that seemed appropriate for a high school crush. We're like, let's stop at second base. That's good. And so it was a really nice night. We talked about high school. I was like, did you like me? She's like, yeah, I gave you a lap dance in the hot tub basically for an hour and then gave you a massage for 90 minutes. It's like a $200 value. I didn't know what else to do. And I was like, well, maybe a notarized note next time would be handy. And so I realized that night, in addition to making out, which was nice, I realized that she stopped being Michelle Glimmerman, the hottest girl in school, and she just became Michelle, this nice girl who was just as nervous and not naive as I was in high school. And so really the best part was just understanding that we're kind of all people, and these people you build up in your past, they're just people going through life as much as you are. So that's a summary of one of the chapters in my book. Thank you.
Wow! Oh, again, it has your distinct combination of honesty and quirkiness and that wonderful discomfort of youth in your stories and honest about that and funny, funny, funny.
Thank you very much.
And your book is called Available, A Tale of, wait, I don't have it in front of me, you say it the rest.
A Memoir of Heartbreak, Hookups, Love, and Brunch.
And it is available on Amazon.
It's on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. It's in bookstores. If you want to get the real thing, it's in a lot of the local independent bookstores. So go check it out. And if you're in LA, you might find a signed copy because I've been going around to some of the bookstores and signing them. So.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's again like another treasure hunt, like the Vajazzle.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yes. There's
your signature.
Yeah, I'm going to vajazzle a lot of the books.
You've been covertly going around just signing random copies?
No, I go into the store and I say I'm an author and I'd love to sign any copies of my book.
Oh, you're there, like it's a
yes.
signing?
No, not official. I mean, I've done some of those too. Like at Skylight Books, I did one and then signed a bunch of extra copies for them. But usually the bookstores are fairly happy to have the author sign the book so they can put the little autographed copy sticker on the front. And they'll display it somewhere and more prominent.
I like the idea of doing it covertly where you just walk around and sign one.
I came from a family of authors, and what we had to do when we were little is like first my dad would go in and then he would take his book and the M's and put it in front of all the other books, and then he'd send us to do the same thing.
Yeah.
So like, you know, like just in case they catch the big guy, they're not going to notice the kids. So
yeah, I've had a couple friends send me pictures of them giving it a better placement in the store. So it's very very nice of everybody.
That's great. Thank you so much for coming on to share that
Thank
with
you.
Us.
My pleasure. Thanks for helping spread the word.
We have a quiz for you.
Okay. Hit me. Quiz answering voice.
Okay. If you answer all of these correctly, you get a cookie.
Oh, all right.
Which of the following is not a dating site?
Okay.
Vegidate.
Mm-hmm.
That's for vegetarian singles.
Okay.
The Atlasphere. That's for admirers of the Fountainhead and Atlas Shrugged.
Sure. Okay.
Meek to Meek. That's dating for shy people.
Okay.
Seeking Arrangement, that's for sugar daddies and sugar babies.
Sure.
And Our Time, that's for baby boomers.
I think that the Atlasphere for Ayn Rand fans is made up.
Oh, that's real.
That's real?
Yeah.
Oh, goodness.
The made up one was Meek to Meek.
Wow. Meek to Meek seems like a good idea. Yeah. They should have that. I mean, no one would ever send a message on there. I really want to check out this Ayn Rand dating website.
Yeah, the Atlasphere.
I hope people are honest on there. You know, they're true objectivists. They list exactly what they want and all their baggage. And
I think it would be pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, second question. If you list yourself as 5'10", mm-hmm. what is your actual height?
Are you a man or a woman?
You're a man.
You're 5'8½".
Very good.
The thing I noticed online is women sometimes size
go down.
They average down. They round down, and men round up.
If you say as 5'10" as a woman, what? How is your actual height?
I think you're 5'11", maybe even 6 foot.
Wow. Okay. If on the first date your date suggests having you meet their parents, mm-hmm. do you A, ask for the check, B, explain that you'd like to take things a little slower?
Mm-hmm.
Or C, raise the stakes and suggest that the parents can all meet at your wedding next week.
I would say I like to take things a bit slower.
Very good.
I had a rule when I was online dating that I would not have dinner for a first date. I would only have drinks. Oh. And I would only do it on a weeknight to
nice.
Try and mitigate the chance of the worst case scenario then is like an hour of your time.
Did you
$20.
Have a worst case?
I had a couple days. I had one date where it seemed pretty clear the woman just wanted some dinner.
Nothing wrong with that.
Well,
this from the personal finance blogger.
I know. The waitress set the check down just randomly, like the way the table was set up. It was easier to set it kind of near my date, and she pushed it towards me and said, "That's not for me." Which I had expected to pay for the date anyway. But usually, like, what you want to have happen is the girl's like, "Can I split this?" And then you're going to be like, no, I'll take care of it. Like, and I get to feel like a hero, and she gets to feel good for offering. So when it became that blatant, it just felt like, oh, what are we here for? This is weird. Yeah.
Yuck.
So that was the beginning of my no dinner. Also, dinner is expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even if you don't go to a super nice place, by the time you tip and...
Someone gave me the suggestion, since I'm still single, as I mentioned before, of taking a walk, of doing a walk.
Yeah.
And then you can stop somewhere if you want. And I was like, I'm almost 50 years old and I never thought of that. No wonder.
Yeah.
Then you can meet their dog too. And that can tell you a lot about a person.
Yeah.
Love pets. I would do a date with a pet. Any ladies out there got pets? I'm available. I don't care if you're bejazzled. So...
Almost Glick, bonus if you're bejazzled.
Tweet me at Almost Glick.
And finally, Madison, last question. What is your favorite word on page 21 of your book?
Let me look. That would be like creepy Rain
Cliff
Man
note.
Stuff if I knew what page 21 was in my book. Ah, furniture. That's a good word.
Yes, great.
Wait,
good
is word. That correct?
Yes. I memorized all the words. Oh.
Well, ring the friggin' bell then.
I memorized all the words on page 21. My favorite word from that page was desperation.
Oh, yeah. That's on every page.
That's very good. The line he had on there was, "Turns out desperation can be a move."
Yes. That was... Oh, I kissed my college girlfriend for the first time. I rolled on top of her and just started kissing. And luckily, she was accepting of said kiss.
Well, you must be doing something right because now you're married.
Now I'm married. Yeah, I figured out one thing. I figured out when you date a lot, when people talk about being good at dating, that seems to mean like being able to get a lot of girls or guys. But I think I became good at, like, I was like a professional dater. Like, I hear about problems now. I'm like, well, that's an amateur move. You shouldn't take someone to an amusement park on a first date. That's of course going to be a disaster. So I did. It wasn't like I was a someone that could just get any girl I wanted, but I got good at going on dates where we would both probably have a good time, which means, you know, you meet people and you have a nice time and it may lead somewhere or not. But at least it will be a fun experience, which I think for a lot of people dating is not. Mm. And then I met my wife and we got married in 4 months. So I guess I got dating out of my system and was ready to go.
Wow. Yeah. That's great. You knew. When you knew.
I did, yeah. No fear.
Oh, awesome. Awesome. Well, I think we have just a bit of time. We might go a little bit over to jump right into the creativity wheel of death. But first, a big round of applause for Madison Perry.
Thank you.
You're wonderful.
Oh, I appreciate that. You're wonderful.
Oh, thank you. So we're going to do the creativity wheel of death.
Yay.
And if you have not done this before, what it is we're just going to spin the wheel and it will land on one of those 12 creative challenges, improvisational creative challenges, which we're just going to jump right in and do in the moment. We're jumping right in. And this is the thing. This is what I always say. It might rock. It might suck. We don't care because we're just having fun being creative in the moment. So I figure we all take a spin and then we all do it. So if you spin first, you might have the longest time to plan a little bit if you want to do. Who gonna spin?
Wait, so we all spin and then after we've all spun, and then, but we have all that time to work on it while other people are spinning. I'm gonna go first.
Okay, yeah, you jump in. Okay. So you get a couple minutes or so to work on it. All right, here go, Vanessa. Take a big spin. Oh, good. Or that one. You know something? It's a stream of consciousness. Do you want to jump right in and just do it? Okay. You can. You take a minute and think about it. You should go first after the spins because it's a stream of consciousness.
Right.
From the top of your head.
Oh, okay.
Right. Can I just go right away?
Yeah, yeah. Almost going to go. You can think. Oh, similar.
Rant about something cute.
Pull it out almost. It almost say, do a 1 minute stream of consciousness rant about something cute.
Can I ask for clarification?
Yes, you can ask for clarification.
A rant is somewhat negative, right? Or I mean, like,
I would say it's powerful. If you want to play with the juxtaposition between rant and cute, you can. Well, but maybe strong emotion. I don't know. Whatever it means to you.
Okay.
All right. Here go, Madison.
Wait, you're going to... Oh, yeah.
Oh, Madison get tell a story about pressing on.
All right.
Okay, and here I go. Almost, I will need your help for this one, and maybe everybody join in. Mine is sing a song about waiting. Oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
Will you give me some musical background?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So who's ready to jump in?
Okay, so I'm ready to do my 1 minute stream of consciousness humble brag about a recent success. So... I felt like I needed to do better at my job where I'm a personal finance columnist. And so I was talking to my boss and I was like, you know, I'm not really happy with this, this pay. I want to have a little more pay. Can I have a raise? And so they're like, well, I don't know. We'll think about it. We'll figure it out. It's, you know, but this takes time. So then the next day I thought, oh, am I gonna leave? Am I gonna stay? Well, let me just, you know, I don't know. I guess I'll just keep staying until I hear back about my raise. And so I saw what is trending, and this is in January. And so in January, Powerball was trending. And so then I just did this story, how to win at Powerball, because, you know, I thought that would be on point. And it turns out the guy that I talked to was at I'm putting in air quotes, lottery expert. He had a system. But anyway, so I did this story on how to win at Powerball, and the very next day, I woke up in the morning and I saw that there were already like 300,000 hits on it. And usually I'm getting 500 or 2,000 and then it kept growing and growing. And all day we kept looking at it and be like, how much is it now? And I think to this day, it's almost 1 million hits on this story on how to win Powerball. So I got my raise. That's
Yay! Very good, Vanessa. All right, Amos?
Yeah.
You're going to do a 1 minute rant?
Yeah.
Here you go.
I've always been a dog person, but I own the cutest cat in the world. His name is Winslow. He's got long black hair, which sometimes get tangled, but I don't mind brushing it out. I'll get in there. I'll get in deep. I try to trim his nails, but I can't, but it doesn't matter because he's so goddamn cute. You know, I'll sit in front of my TV, like I said before, in my tighty whities. Well, my Lululemons, and my beer, and watch hockey. But then I look down at my feet, and there's my cute little cat all cuddled up. And I pick him up, and I go, are you the cutest little poodle-woodle in the world? I call him a poodle-woodle. He's a goddamn cat. But he acts like a dog, and that's why I like him so much. He crawls up on my chest, and he gives me peck massages. He's cute. He's cute when he eats his little food. He sits, he like lays down. He looks like a little Cleopatra lion, I want to say, like a little Egyptian lion. And I hear the little... And even that is goddamn cute. And then he has this cute thing where if I scrunch under his chin and go like that, he coos. He goes, that's fucking cute, man. I don't care if you're a dog person. You gotta love the cute cats.
Boom! 1 minute exactly. Very good. Madison, tell a story about pressing on.
I wanted to be a writer since I was about 15, and I started reading Hemingway and Fitzgerald in high school. And so I went to college for screenwriting. At that point, I decided I'd rather write the great American blockbuster than the great American novel. And so through my 20s, I worked in the film industry and wrote screenplays, but didn't have much success and wasn't really writing that much because I was waiting to be discovered, people to just sense my talent and hire me. And that was not happening. And so I came up with a plan to, this is my plan to make it in Hollywood, was I would get an MBA, a business degree, and then I would go to work at a studio, and then I would rise through the ranks of the executives to a place where I could greenlight my own scripts. So this is basically like a $60,000, 3 to 8 year procrastination plan I had convinced myself was worth it. And so I took... the test you have to take, and I applied to schools, and I got into none of them. And so when I got all those rejection letters, I was like, well, how am I going to become a writer now? Guess I'll just have to write. And so I started writing every day for the first time in my life. And so that's kind of, it took several years to get to the place where I now have a book written, but sometimes you just have to keep pressing on in artwork to get where you want to go.
Yay! Amos, grab your guitar. I'm gonna sing a song about waiting. Maybe a little blues riff, and we'll do it maybe just a minute long or something.
Okay.
I hope I can do this.
Blues riff.
Whatever you can do, I'll just fit my words into there. I hope. The lady ahead of me, she have nice pants. I don't want her to catch me giving them too long a glance. I feel a burn, I feel a burn, and when is it gonna be my turn? Everybody going in, but I don't seem to get to win. The lady's bathroom is always crowded. The lady's bathroom is always so crowded. And I'm just waiting for a stall. Yes, I'm just waiting for them all to finish. I'm just waiting for a stall. I don't know how long I can wait for long. I'm
just waiting for a star.
That was really fun. Thank you very much.
I can't believe you just made that up.
I did.
Amazing.
I have to tell you, I can't believe it either.
It just came out of you.
Yeah, well, while you guys was doing yours, I did write down the rhyme of pence and glance. And I thought of turn and burn. So I had those in my mind. And then I also thought ahead of time, well, what could I be waiting for? And I thought, I went through a couple of different, and I decided, okay, ladies is often waiting for the bathroom. That's all I decided. But boy, almost the tune came out nice.
It was hard because you can do the blues. You can, you know, there's the traditional 12-bar blues, but there's all these ways to interpret that. And I was hard to figure out where we were, but we figured it out.
We figured it out.
Yeah.
That was really fun. Now my favorite part of the show, the plugs.
The what?
The plugs.
Ah.
It's time for the plugs. Everybody gonna plug it in. Madison, please to plug again your wonderful book, Available, A Memoir of Heartbreak, Hookups, Love, and Brunch.
Yes, please buy it in bookstores or online. You can go to my website, which is MattesonPerry.com, MattesonPerry.com, and there's links to all the places you can buy it, including the audiobook, which I narrated.
Oh!
Yeah.
That's really good. You have such a lovely way of telling the stories. Your vocal intonations is so funny. That's a good one, too, the audiobook. Never thought of that. Great, thank you. And
thank
do you have any live storytelling events?
I do. I will be at Green Apple Books in San Francisco on Thursday the 2nd, and Mill Valley Public Library on Friday the 3rd, and then in Denver, Colorado at the Tattered Cover on June 9th.
Fantastic.
Yes.
Good. Vanessa, where can people find to you?
Well, they can learn about savvy shopping and money type things on Forbes. If you go to Forbes.com and just search for me, Vanessa McGrady, you will find me. And then you can also visit my new sustainable travel and lifestyle blog, greenmeansgotravel.com.
Oh, excellent. Amos?
Well, pretty much everything is on amosglick.com. But if you're particularly interested in my music, you can go to pondermusic.com where you can purchase my CD called A Little Bit Sane. The song I sang today is not on that album. I feel like offering a little gift since I've been on this podcast a few times. I don't know if anybody out there cares, but if you would like to watch my film, which you can't normally, I'll give probably anybody, but let's say up to five people who chime into you, I'll give them the passcode to watch my film online.
Oh, that's great.
Sure.
Do you want to have them tweet to you? The first five
sure.
To you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Almost Glick.
At almost Glick. What's
it? Or here, if that's if they, yeah.
Okay, the first five.
But you know what? I thought you were going to ask me, interview me a little bit about Frobway, and which you had said you were going to do, and I told my Frobway friends, and if they've been listening, I'm sorry we didn't get to that, but I want to mention Frobway, which we do our shows the last Saturday every month at Impro for the time being. Impro Theater is in Los Feliz on Vermont. In a little shopping mall, what do you call them, those little mall, strip mall there. And we do a show called Songs in the Key of Murder. It's noir musical, and they're a wonderful bunch of improvisers directed by the wonderful and hilarious and talented Brian Lohman. And in addition to that, I just want to give a just shout out in general to the Impro Theater community. These guys are amazing improvisers and teachers, and if you're interested in long-form narrative improv and you're in the LA area, you should check them out.
Yeah.
Impro Theater.
I'm really glad you mentioned that, and I'm so sorry I forgot to interview you about that.
It's okay.
Next time you come on.
Oh, one last thing. Something that just came up recently. I've been asked to judge in a theater a film festival. I can't tell which one, but I'm just going to say, I'm going to put it out there. If you made a short film that got into a festival, I might be judging it. So I will be accepting gifts at Almost Glick. Never know which festival.
Yeah. And I want to also second your shout out to Broadway LA. We've heard a taste all these times of Amos's musical talent and improvisational talent. very much looking forward to seeing it on stage again. All of this information and everybody's website is also going to be listed on our website, podcast.thegiselleshow.com. I want to say that big thanks to our producer, Anthony. He do the technical and the website. Thank you so much to Marty Yu for loaning his sound equipment. Thank you to the wonderful musicians and composers who share their music for us to use on the podcast. This week we have had music from Le Chevalier de Rinchi, Jason Shaw, Deng Fever, and of course the Freak Fandango Orchestra. And thank you so much to our listeners, you guys, for downloading, subscribing, listening live and supporting us, spreading the word, give us feedback, and please keep to contributing your creative work. Everything for you is at podcast.thegiselleshow.com. You can reach out to us there. Goodbye, and thank you for listening to The Giselle Show podcast, mit friends. We'll see you soon. Bye for now.